Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hi everyone, Caitlin here. Just wanted to give you a quick intro to the episode you're about to hear on the movie Anastasia. We recorded it live as Jamie's birthday show, which we had so much fun doing. And while the audio quality for the most part is pretty good, there are a few times when the audio kind of blips out for a split second, and we apologize for that. But otherwise, it's a damn fine episode, and we hope you enjoy.
On the BechdelCast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the BechdelCast.
Thank you so much.
Hi. Oh,
welcome to the BechdelCast.
Hello, welcome.
I just, for context for everyone, I just got a six pack of Mike's Hard Watermelon. Thank you. That's just proof that when you get a DM saying, "Are you allergic to watermelon?" you answer it as quickly as you can, because you never know. Oh man, what a gift! This has got to be real bad, right? This is. I'll be sampling it throughout the night. Welcome everyone. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for being here.
For
Jamie's birthday show.
Yay. It feels like we're recording it. It's not my birthday for a month, but for the sake of tonight, we're cosplaying as if it is my birthday.
And the episode will be released pretty close to your birthday.
Yeah. So suspend your disbelief. Don't cancel me. It's not necessarily my actual birthday, but feel free to give me gifts, I think, is the real takeaway.
Sure.
And so we're doing one of my fave movies tonight. I'm so excited. We're doing Anastasia.
Ooh. But let's get some business out of the way first.
Yes.
My name is Caitlin.
My name is Jamie.
We talk about the representation of women in movies on this here podcast.
Yes.
At the end.
We use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point for discussion.
What's the Bechdel test?
What if I was like, I don't know. I can't answer a follow-up question. The Bechdel test is a media metric designed by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, in which there must be an interaction between two named female identifying characters, and they have to talk to each other for two lines of dialogue about something other than a man. I wish there was like a mathematical equation for like what we just said, because it sounds like math.
Right. It's like A squared plus B squared equals C squared. That's Pythagorean's theorem. Hello?
You're so smart.
So it's not.
She's a master's degree, so keep up.
Let's demonstrate it.
Okay.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Caitlin.
I got you a birthday gift, too.
Really?
Here it comes.
I don't.
I didn't wrap it.
Oh, my God. Wait, this is so cute.
Describe it for our listeners at home.
What if I was like, I love it. Thank you. It is an enamel pin of Rose from Titanic. There, thank you so much. Thank you. It's the moment where she looks up and she sees Titanic for the first time.
And she's not that impressed. And she's like, it doesn't look any bigger than the Martania.
And then Cal, a.k.a. Billy Zane, is like, oh, don't be silly. It's over 100 feet longer than the Martania.
Well, now it doesn't pass the Bechdel test because you said Cal, but...
Oh, I guess we finished a while ago. I'm sorry. I just...
That's okay.
Sorry, I can't look at this without thinking of Billy Zane, and that is tragically my feminism.
Another surprise...
Thank you so much.
...is that... Oh. I got one for myself.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm gonna fasten it on right now onto my Yay. Little suit.
Oh. So happy birthday.
For those listening, I'm wearing a little suit tonight. Thank you. This
You're
is
welcome.
I won't leave home without it ever again. That was all our business, right?
I believe so.
Birthday business. Mm-hmm. What the show is business. Oh, clap if you have been to one of our live shows before. Cool. And then clap if your friend dragged you here. Yes.
Welcome. Oh.
Very brave of you. And all right.
By round of applause, who has seen the movie Anastasia? Okay, good. Is there anyone who has not seen it? Clap your little paws together. It's they just apologize. It's okay.
Listen, I think that women should be doing more is apologizing, and so I really welcome that in the room. It's okay.
It's okay. And I've written out a recap, as I always do. It's, I think, the longest recap I've ever written.
Really?
I don't know why.
It's not a very long movie.
It's not a long movie, but the story is so rich.
And also, I mean, I would say it's more or less historically accurate.
Yeah. So
if you're familiar with the, you know, Russian history, you know this story inside and out.
Yeah. To join us in our discussion, we, of course, have a guest.
Yes.
She is a wonderful person. She is a hilarious comedian. Please give it up for Anna Saragina.
There she is.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I know.
Oh, my God, wow.
I mean, feel free to grab a mic at literally any
grab
time.
The mics. Yeah.
You're feeling crazy.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So, Anna, what is your history relationship with the movie Anastasia, or Anastasia as a historical figure?
Wow, it dates back to yesterday when we watched it together.
Uh-huh.
And so in that, it is rich and luscious and historically bound, and I feel very rooted in it.
Yeah.
Also.
Oh, incredible.
And I'm Russian, and my name's Anna, and really it's Anya, so people, when I moved here, people were like, oh, like Anastasia.
Uh-huh.
You know, just like that. And so I'd say, well, yes. So then for a long time, I just didn't watch it. I think out of that.
I see.
I was like, I'm
just
not going to be
protest.
Defined.
Yeah.
At a protest.
Yeah.
There's that movie called Caitlin that I refuse to watch.
Yeah, I get it.
There's not. I'm. Yeah.
There's a Jamie in A Walk to Remember, but she dies.
Oh.
Is she the... She's the one?
She's Mandy Moore. And
what?
She's
Butterfly Tattoo?
Yeah, and she dies to teach Shane West a lesson.
Nice.
Which is a plot device that I love.
That I love. That you should do.
I can't wait to die one day so some guy can learn something.
Yeah.
Oh, just to make him a little nicer in college.
Oh, my God.
My history with this movie is that I... saw it once. It came out in 97, so I would have been 11. I must have seen it when I was 11, and then never. The only thing I remembered was that there was a train.
What
happened with the train. I just knew there was a train. That's the only thing I remembered, because I only saw it that once, and then have rewatched it 3 times now in the past few days.
Wow.
I know.
It's fun.
I know.
It's a fun movie. This was one of my favorite movies. This movie came out when I think I was like 4 or 5, and I was like the target demo because it was really loud. Like, there was a lot of music. And I was, like, really scared of Rasputin, but I kind of also had a crush on him.
Of course you did.
Really, like, I loved the Rasputin character, and I remember telling my mom, I was just like, why aren't there toys of him? And she was like, I don't know. And but there's, I would say, some of the, maybe this is, I just got nervous before it, some of the sexiest cartoons in, because this isn't a Disney cartoon, if that matters to you. It really doesn't matter, but it's not a Disney cartoon, so it is a little bit hornier than your, and a little better, I think, than like your average cartoon. So, I love this movie. I saw it on Ice. It was on
Anastasia on Ice.
Anastasia on Ice. I was telling you last night, it was the first time I noticed a butt. I was like, that was like maybe a few years after that when Anastasia was making the rounds on Ice this time.
Mm-hmm. Wait, whose butt?
Dimitri's butt.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good.
All right.
But there was, me and my brother still talk about it sometimes, how at that ice show, Rasputin was on ice and his beard kept flying into his mouth. He was having a really difficult time. I love this. I probably watch this movie, like, it's like a go-to movie for when I'm like sick.
Okay.
I'll watch it. And so I watch it, you know, I'm very sick. So all the time. Love it.
Great. Should we dive in with the recap?
Let's dive in, Caitlin.
Alrighty. So the year is 1916. Titanic has been sunk for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nicholas is the Tsar of Imperial Russia. There's this royal family, the Romanovs. They are
ever
celebrating.
Yeah.
So far, this is accurate.
Yes.
Except for, I think the year isn't even right.
It's already 2 years off of the year.
But there is the Romanov family, and they are the royal family, and they're celebrating 300 years of ruling the country. Mm. And Anastasia is, I think, the youngest daughter. She's the young princess, duchess, and her grandmother gives her a music box and a necklace that says, "Together in Paris."
And there's the neck. It is the most annoying thing in the world, poking historical inaccuracies, but I will be doing it all night. Mm-hmm. So she went to Denmark. She didn't go to Paris, but no one wants to sing Bernadette Peters didn't want to sing a song about Denmark. So, mm-hmm. Moved it to Paris.
So, before they can go to Paris together, Rasputin shows up.
He's like, he's built kind of like, he's like as skinny as Jafar,
mm-hmm. Yes.
But like already dead. Like it's.
Yes.
He is like, yeah, I don't
he's
know.
He's post-dead. Yeah.
Yeah, post-dead.
And, but hot, you know.
Yeah.
Factually hot.
And there's
historically hot.
Historically hot.
Historically hot.
I was there. And
you can
he
look
was
up.
Hot. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We'll be looking over for confirmation from real
anything
life
you want. Absolutely. I was there the whole
like,
time.
Rasputin is hot, right?
He was, yes.
Okay. Cool.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. He was hot.
So Rasputin places a curse on the Romanov family. He's holding a grudge. He wants them to die.
He's mean, and he sold his devil to the green thing.
He sold his soul.
Yeah.
And he places this curse, and I guess that's what starts the Russian Revolution, according to this movie.
He also bit someone's ankle.
Yes.
Which is a huge power move.
That's a war starter.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah.
It's so weird. There's been so much written about World War I and the Russian Revolution, and it's like it really was quite simple what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Rasputin shows up and places a curse.
And he threatened the Tsar and he put a curse on. And I mean, we're starting a war, of course. Uh-huh.
So chaos ensues. Anastasia and her grandmother manage to escape with the help of a servant boy, but she drops her music box that was given to her.
The music box, by the way, like, it's so, I don't know if anyone who was watching it like got really distracted by the fact that the music box is clearly CGI, but the rest is 2D. Where you're just like, what plane is this music box on? Yeah. It looks so freaky. Like the whole, why did they do that? So, okay.
The like flying horse at the end is also CGI.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's like some CGI that works like in the train scene. I'm like, oh, this is like kind of effective. And like in the ballroom scene where all the ghosts are dancing, you're like, this is fun. But the fleshy horse, I did not like
Wild.
The fleshy horse.
So then Rasputin drowns as he's trying to, like, grab at Anastasia. And then Anastasia and her grandmother are headed to safety, but in all of the chaos, they get separated forever. Or not, maybe we'll see.
And then Anastasia bumps her little head, and right. she's and then, like, I forget.
Yeah, she forgot.
It gives her amnesia for a very long time. Yeah. So it's 10 years later now. We're in St. Petersburg.
We're under Joseph Stalin is in power now, a fact yes. that is not
mentioned at all.
No.
And at this point, he's hot, and that's actually not mentioned either.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay, we take your word for it.
Please, yeah.
There. I mean, he did the facial hair. You know, it's under discussion. It's under... Mm-hmm.
So rumors are being spread around that Anastasia, who was thought to have died in Rasputin's revolution...
Well, from that ankle bite alone.
that Anastasia might actually still be alive, which she is. She goes by Anya now, but she has no memory of her former royal life, and she has no idea that she is Anastasia. The only clue that she has is the necklace that she was given that says Together in Paris. So she decides to go to St. Petersburg and tries to buy a ticket to Paris to discover her family history, but she doesn't have the proper documentation, so someone tells her to go find this guy, Dimitri, to help her out.
John Cusack. This is one of the, like, sexier cartoons in I think cartoon history, because he's got... really he looks is. Like John Cusack at that exact moment. Yeah. Like, he's got the middle part, and he keeps flopping his fangs out of the way. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's... Sickos? Gross.
So we learn that Dimitri is a con man, and he is in the process of auditioning actors who look like Anastasia to pretend to be her so that they can take her to Paris and get the reward that the Dowager Empress is offering.
And he also is in cahoots with Kelsey Grammer.
Yes. Yes. His name is Vlad.
Sure.
My favorite part of the movie is when later on the grandmother's like, Dimitri, I've heard of you, as if Dimitri wasn't one of the most common Russian names.
It's like someone walking in and being like, ah, yes, this Joey I've heard of.
So Dimitri has Anastasia's music box, and we're like, how'd he get that? But this gives him a leg up on bringing an Anastasia-like person to the Empress.
Right.
So then Anya shows up to where Dimitri is, and he's like, hey, you look just like Anastasia. We think you might be her. She's like, I don't know. I don't know.
This whole scene happens while she's standing next to an oil painting of Anastasia.
Of herself.
And she's like, could be.
But then she decides to go to Paris with them, rationalizing that, like, hey, maybe I am Anastasia, and maybe I'm not, but there's only one way to find out.
Well, and also, they were able to, like, get her the documents she needed. It seemed like if she didn't play ball with this plan,
she had no way of getting to Paris.
Country.
Right. Meanwhile, Rasputin, remember him? Ever heard of him? He is still alive, sort of.
Yeah, a lot of like cartoony body horror.
Oh, there really is, graphic stuff.
Well, the Rasputin stuff is like, this movie has like some like tonal dissonance issues where there'll be like these serious, scary things that happen to Anastasia. And then you'll like cut to Rasputin being like, my plan didn't work. And then he'll rip his face off and like throw it on the ground.
It's very spooky.
Yeah.
It's very Tom Waits sort of, you know, bones dancing. Yeah. It's great. And his side, well, I kept trying to call it a side piece, but his sidekick is, you know, he's got this classic side piece. It's a nude bat?
Yeah. It's
and I know all bats are nude, but like this one's, I mean,
well, it's an albino bat.
It's got a little bit of a luscious, small luscious body. And that's also hot, you know.
Also hot. I love my curvy bat.
I love my curvy bat.
Voiced by Hank Azaria.
With an accent that is To me, problematic. To me, problematic. Yeah.
I don't know what he's trying to do, but it's not right, whatever it is.
And we'll talk about the accents in this movie, too, because we were checking with Anna last night for if
there
any sort of realism to it, and it looks like no.
Well, to be determined.
Okay.
Okay.
Teaser.
So Rasputin is stuck in this, like, hell limbo place because Anastasia survived, and he has a Horcrux. He's basically Voldemort.
Yeah. And he's also sort of living in the same place Scar from The Lion King lives in. It's just kind of like a rock den, and there's green fog, but instead of hyenas, there's bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then he has the bat friend, Bartok.
Gorgeous little body.
Who helps... He helps Rasputin get out of limbo so that Rasputin can kill Anastasia, and they sing a terrific song about it.
Really good, yeah.
It rocks.
Yeah. It does. It's a great villain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Dimitri and Anastasia, and then Vlad, also Kelsey Grammer, are on their way to Paris, and Dimitri and Anya are attracted to each other.
And they're doing a little bit of light negging.
Oh, I would call it heavy negging.
It's so weird. Like, I didn't realize that until this watch, but like Meg Ryan voices Anastasia, and they're just doing a scene from most Meg Ryan movies where she's being negged, but she's like, stop.
Right.
And that's just kind of what's happening.
So then Rasputin's little ghost minions cause the train that they're on to crash, but they survive and they continue onward to Paris. And then Vlad and Dimitri teach Anya how to be fancy so that she
can
pass.
There's a big Pygmalion scene in the middle of the movie.
Yeah. And then she and Dimitri almost kiss on a ship that sort of looks like Titanic.
And Anastasia's wearing the dress that Ariel wears in the Little Mermaid.
Right.
And also kind of looks like the dress that the little girls in The Shining wear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there's another Shining reference when she gets trapped in a maze later on.
Oh, yeah.
So
who knows what's going on?
So they almost kiss, but then Dimitri is like, no, I shouldn't. And then Rasputin's minions try to kill Anastasia again on the ship.
Do you remember when minions were just little evil things that helped Rasputin?
And not
cutie pies?
Yellow things with glasses.
And not cutie pies that I love.
Then Dimitri saves her from, and so she doesn't die. And then they finally get to Paris. The plan is to see Sophie, the Empress's first cousin, to convince her that Anastasia is, in fact, Anastasia. Or rather, Anya is Anastasia.
And Sophie and Vlad, a.k.a. Kelsey Grammer, are for sure fucking. Which isn't really relevant to the plot, but he foreshadows really heavily for some reason. Like, he keeps bringing up, like, Sophie, yeah!
He's like, oh, she's a cream puff, and I want to fuck her.
Like, I don't know why it's so important to the plot of this movie that you know that Kelsey Grammer's character is, like, for sure fucking this French lady. Yeah. But it's really important.
It's important, yeah.
It's important. It comes up a lot.
Yeah. Yes. So then Anya answers all of Sophie's questions correctly, including one about how she escaped the palace, saying that there was a boy who helped her escape by opening up this wall, because I guess her memory is coming back. And then Dimitri's like, oh, fuck, that actually is Anastasia because he was the boy who helped.
That's...
Wow. Oh, my God.
I hope you're not going to make fun of that, because that's really nice.
Oh, no.
I think it's cute.
No, I think it's like a really effective use of plant and payoff. Ooh. Yeah, I have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University.
Guys, take Caitlin's course.
I don't like to bring it up. Okay, so, but right then, the Empress decides not to see any more women claiming to be Anastasia because it keeps letting her down and it keeps breaking her heart. Yeah. So they decide to stalk the Empress at the ballet instead. And then Dimitri goes up to her and he's like, you got to see her. She's the real deal. And the Empress is like, no. And then Anastasia overhears the Empress saying that she knows about Dimitri's reputation somehow. Again, she's like, Dimitri, I've heard of you, that he's a con man who is holding auditions for Anastasia lookalikes. So Anastasia hears all this and she's like, Dimitri, you freaking ass. You used me. She slaps him. Oh, what a good slap.
I forgot that she slapped. I always get, so I was like, oh, like, it's very exciting. It's very gratifying. And he doesn't even go like, that sucked. He's just like, I'm sorry.
You have to know the truth.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, that is, whew, love it.
So she runs away. And then
cartoons smacking each other around.
To set things right, Dimitri kidnaps the Empress and takes her to Anastasia. And then the Empress doesn't believe that she is Anastasia at first, but then Anastasia's like, you smell like peppermint. And she's like, it is you.
Yeah.
And then finally, grandmother and granddaughter are reunited. Mm-hmm. And Dimitri doesn't even want the money because he's a good guy
now.
Because
he's changed, you guys. He's different now.
And he leaves because he's in love with Anastasia.
I love that
and
scene.
He just
where
can't handle it.
I love that scene where the grandma's like, did you have a change of mind? And then he goes, more like a change of heart. And you're like,
That's powerful. I don't care who you are.
I'm tearing up. I'm just like, people can change.
Wow.
And then she's like, well, if you don't want the money, what do you want? And he's like, nothing you can give me, which is code for, like, he wants to put his pee-pee into Anastasia's VV.
Yeah.
Caitlin, that's a vulgar.
His wants are very heteronormative, but it's fine.
Yes.
You know? It's fine for
but
now.
But he changed.
But he changed, yeah, of course.
So at the celebratory ball, Rasputin shows up. He traps Anastasia in the maze from The Shining, mm-hmm. and he tries to kill her, but then Dimitri shows back up and helps her defeat Rasputin.
He punches Rasputin in the face.
Yeah, and then gets attacked by that creepy horse
the
thing.
The fleshy horse.
And then they defeat Rasputin, and then they
Anastasia
share a kiss.
Anastasia defeats
and,
Rasputin.
Yeah, oh, we'll talk all about
it.
Oh,
it's so exciting.
And then they share a kiss, and then they elope.
Right away.
Yeah.
I honestly kind of respect that you don't see the wedding. You just see a letter saying, like, yeah, we will be back in a couple of weeks. That's it.
What if they went back to Russia and got killed by Stalin?
Caitlin!
I'm sorry! The real Anastasia died in 1918.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think you'll find from this documentary that's not true.
Okay, so then that's the end of the movie.
Well, you forgot Bartok.
Oh, also. Bartok finds a pink bat and...
What a horrible thing to, like, you're like, oh, the movie ended. I'm actually not too upset about how it ended for a movie of this type. And then all of a sudden they're like, Mrs. Bat is here. And she, like, assaults the Hank Azaria bat, but he's into it.
Yeah.
The end. It's
like, so, right, that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, all right, man. Where do we want to start?
I wanted to start by, okay, so part of the, okay, this movie was well-received when it came out, an instant classic, IMO. In retrospect, it is considered one of the most, the movies with the most celebrity voice miscastings in any animated movie ever. So I just wanted to just a yes or a no quick opinion on, like, do you think, because, like, after Aladdin and, like, after Robin Williams, like, this is literally a Lindsay Ellis video that came out a couple months ago. Robin Williams, like, gets the whole celebrity voice thing, kind of takes off. Now all voice actors are unemployed. Suck it. And now it's celebs only.
Yeah.
And this, like, everyone in this movie is a celebrity, even parts that don't matter. It's weird. So, just quick yes or no. Do you think, as Anastasia, Meg Ryan, what do you think? Yes or no?
Yes.
Fine with me.
I think yes.
Okay, cool. Okay. Glad we agree.
Okay, I'm doing easy ones at the top.
Okay.
John Cusack as Dimitri.
It worked.
I'm
I
a
suppose.
Hard yes.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, good. Maybe this game isn't fun. All right, up next, we got Angela Lansbury as the Empress.
Well, the accent she's attempting is perhaps not...
I'm a no on this one.
She's Mrs. Potts and nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, yes to that, no to the general, yes.
Here's my note for her, a bit much.
Okay.
Honey, quick note,
yeah.
Bit much.
Could we actually dial it back? This movie isn't about you.
No.
Okay, Kelsey Grammer as Rasputin. Or no, wait, Kelsey Grammer is Vlad.
Please.
Kelsey Grammer is Vlad.
Again, really weird accent choices. That's a no for me.
Bad accent, hard yes.
Okay.
Would have loved him as Rasputin, actually.
He would have been a great Rasputin.
Yeah. As that guy, you know, who cares? Fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because he's, like, a little sneaky and has wild facial hair, and
Sure. His character is confusing to me for a number of reasons. Mainly because he's like, I'm a con man, and then it's a twist later that he used to work for the Tsar, But then it's like, well, that's not good. And then at the end, he kind of just gets his job back.
Right.
Even though there's not a czar. Like, yeah. It's confusing. Christopher Lloyd as Rasputin.
Hard yes.
Okay. I think yes. I think Alfred Molina could have done it better. And I think that the accent sounds crazy. I don't even know what a good Russian accent really sounds like, but it sounds crazy.
The accent leaves much to be desired. however, it's fine also.
Yeah. Okay, Hank Azaria as the bat.
No.
I'm a no on the bat.
It's going to be a firm no for me.
Okay, that was the people I wanted to discuss.
His accent sounds like when Russian people try to sound American as a joke to point out how stupid Americans sound. So like when we would do accents, it would be like, yeah, take it off, baby. Rock on. Why not? Here we go to the store. it's like so wild. It's just so weird. What?
Yeah. It's, I mean.
But really, like, Russian accents from all walks of life in this movie. Some people not doing one at all.
Right.
Perhaps the best Russian accent is the one you don't do. It's really jazz. You know? Wow.
I hope that Meg Ryan tried to do a Russian accent in a few takes and they were like, just do it.
She's too good at being quirky. It's like,
yeah.
She can't.
And then also, working. Like, I mean, Hank Azaria, well known for being really respectful when he's doing voice work.
Yes. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah, notoriously. Yes.
There's a whole documentary about it.
There sure is, yeah.
So, yeah.
That's who we're working with. Mm-hmm. There's also additional voices. Oh, and also Kirsten Dunst is Little Anastasia.
Yeah.
Lacey Chabert is Little Singing Anastasia. And J.K. Simmons is credited as additional voices.
What?
When I was rewatching it today, I'm like, where is he at? Where is he? I couldn't find him. But he's that good.
He's that good.
He disappears into the role. You can't. But he's credited in that movie as
he's just a town guy going, hey. Voices.
maybe he plays Comrade Flemingkoff, which is the orphanage lady. I don't know.
Ooh.
Probably not.
Hot take.
Thank you.
It's a hot take.
So we've got the cast. Should we talk about Anastasia, the character?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So my kind of objective take, since I didn't really grow up with this movie, and I feel like it's hard not to compare this to Disney movies.
Oh, no, they're stealing everything from Disney movies.
So just to kind of compare Anastasia as a character to the like Disney Renaissance princesses of this time, I would say overall Anastasia is just better characterized. She has more personality than a lot of them. We know things about her, like she's confident. She tends to like push back on anyone like, you know, giving her attitude. Different things she says to Dimitri, stop bossing me around. Don't talk anymore. It's only going to upset me. And then she accidentally punches Dimitri in the face, like as she's waking up. And then she's like, oh, sorry, I thought you were someone else. And then she sees it's him. She's like, oh, wait, it's you. That's okay then. And then he's like, oh, you broke my nose. And then like kind of to herself, she's like, men are babies. Yeah. So, you know, she's feisty. I like her.
She's fun. She, like, actually tells jokes. She start, like, her actual, like, journey starts because she, like, decides to, like, she leaves the orphanage. She knows where she's going. She's sort of, like, playing along with Dimitri and Vlad's plan because she needs to get out of the country. So it's not, like, she's not completely convinced that she's Anastasia just because some, like, just because John Cusack was like, you probably are. She's like, well, either way, I got to get out of the country.
Yeah.
So, and then she, and this was like, because I wasn't quite sure, because I only watch this movie when I'm sick. So I rarely see the end of it.
Okay.
So I forgot like how involved he is in like the final like big battle with Rasputin. And I was like a little worried because the way that scene plays out is that Rasputin, you know, he like throws her to the ground
And then Dimitri shows up, punches Rasputin in the face, and you're like, oh, I hope that this isn't like one of those battles where she's rescued and she's just sort of over there the whole time. And she's over there for a little bit, but...
And he does kind of have to like pull her up. It seems like she's going to be damseled. But then
he kind of fails to save her a couple of times. Yeah. Rasputin's really kicking him around, and he's thrown to like the side and like passed out. And it kind of reminded me of what happens to Jasmine in Aladdin, where he's literally tossed out of the scene. And you're like, oh, that never happens to the guy in the scene. And then Anastasia gets his, and this is the big vocabulary word of this movie, reliquary.
Oh.
I had the novelization of this book when I was little, and I just remember my dad really struggling with that word. He was like, all the minions in Rasputin is, what the fuck is that? Just really didn't care for that chapter. But she stomps on the reliquary 3 times and she kills Rasputin.
Yes.
It's exciting.
She's like, this is for Dimitri, this is for my family, and this is for you. And then she crushes it and he dies. So yeah,
he also turns into goop and then dust.
Yeah.
It's a very, and there's like so many things that I like about this that like Disney movies never quite go there. Like the villain always like falls off a cliff and just like slowly disappears, but they're like, no.
We are seeing his violent graphic death.
When you die, you turn into goop and then dust.
But what there's happens? Like, he's a skeleton at some point in between that. It's wild. So
he pulls his head off, he rips his face off. He's a goof.
But I did love that, you know, it seems like she might be damseled, and that's what happens in all these Disney movies. But then, yeah, the tides shift, and she's the one, unlike... So Jasmine, she's, like, cast aside for the climax of the story, but she's also not the protagonist of that movie, Aladdin is. But even in, like, Belle and Beauty and the Beast and Ariel and the Little Mermaid... They're the protagonists of those movies, and they still aren't even allowed to participate in the climax of their own story because it's their male love interests who come in and save the day. So I loved that Anastasia is the one who takes the reins and actually actively defeats the villain herself.
And it works better for the story too, because it's like there's that whole like the only reason she knows him is because he killed her entire family.
Right.
So if someone else kills him, it's like. I mean, I'm glad he's dead, I guess.
But she's the one who would want the revenge against him. So the fact that she, like, gets the big cathartic...
It's an awesome scene! Yeah. It's the coolest.
So there's that. There are a few moments where, like, she helps Dimitri, like, on the train scene. Like, she's an active participant. He's still kind of, like, taking the lead after, like, the train starts crashing. Like, he's kind of doing most of the stuff, and then she helps.
Yeah. I do think that, like, there it feels mostly, like, a lot of times he'll try to do something, and then it will fail, and then she'll just do it, like, the correct way. Like, that happens a couple different times. I don't even know how intentional that was in the writing, but it's, like, kind of fun to see, like, this, like, guy, this, like, macho character over and over be like, I've got this. And then there's, like, an explosion in front of him. He's like, ugh. And then, and then Anastasia kind of takes care of it.
The Russian woman just has to come in and, our work is never done. I mean,
another thing that this movie doesn't do that a lot of Disney movies from this time definitely do is like really over-sexualize its female character, its main female character. For most of the movie, Anastasia is in like this giant coat and then like, you know, she's got the hat and the scarf and the boots.
Yeah. Still somehow she's like a look. It's a good look.
It's a very Meg Ryan look, actually.
Yeah.
It's very like chunky bangs and like a floppy hat and like a clumsy jacket for her to be like... It just,
right.
I would say that we see like more of Dimitri's body than we do of hers for most of the movie.
That butt.
And that's fine with me. No criticism. But like Rasputin and Anastasia are wearing the same outfit for most of the movie. Just like a belted sack.
You know, communism, you know, that's why. Yeah. Sick.
The fits are strong.
But then she does get a makeover, and there is a shopping montage. Cause say it with me now, women be shopping.
This movie's not, there's a whole shopping song for crying out loud. They brought in Bernadette Peters to sing the Shopping in France song, and yeah, it's so weird because it's like this movie doesn't like get too into like the Pygmalion and like My Fair Lady references, but there's a solid 15 minutes where that's all it is.
Right.
And so it's all like random con artists giving women makeovers for sinister purposes.
Mm-hmm. I guess at least it's not to make her more attractive to the man. It's right. to make her be able to pass as royalty.
Yeah.
So at least socioeconomic. There's that. Yeah.
I mean, this is like still one of those movies, I hate to admit it, but it is one of those like 90s era movies that the central plot is a woman being deceived.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually fucking him anyways.
Okay, so because I didn't remember this movie at all, except for the train, I was like, okay, I see them. They're negging each other. Jamie is opening her Mike's Hard watermelon.
I'm going to take a waft of that really quick.
Hell yeah. I smell it from over here.
It is.
Nice.
That is potent.
I always worry, but nice. I'm like, they're all twist offs. Yeah. Mike's is never trying to challenge you.
No. It's a hard lemonade, but it's not that hard. You know?
It's not hard.
So anyway, they meet each other. You can tell. Is it horrible?
I never had this flavor before.
How is it?
It's salty?
Salty!
Tastes salty.
May really? I taste it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's overwhelming.
Oh, it has a really bad aftertaste.
May I taste it?
Yeah, go okay. for it.
Well, it's salty, bad aftertaste. I gotta know. Salty?
Oh, I will finish it, though.
Bad aftertaste, yeah. Story checks out. Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, okay, so. The two characters come face to face for the first time, Anastasia and Dimitri, and you can tell that they're going to be foisted together into a romantic entanglement.
Yes.
Even though he's an asshole, she knows that he's an asshole. We know he's an asshole as the audience. He's negging her. He's treating her like shit most of the time. And he's also lying to her for a good chunk of the movie.
Yes.
As I'm seeing all this unfold, I said, I bet myself $10 that they kiss at the end. And I won $10 because... They kiss at the end.
They do kiss, but initiates the kiss.
She does initiate it, yes.
It's a hot kiss, so there's that. Not to be a Dimitri apologist, but there is a lot of, okay, so what is like different about this movie? I mean, what isn't different about this movie? But the way the relationship is between like the princess character and like the guy pursuing her is it's literally a Meg Ryan movie, which is why all those weird 90s tropes of like, being deceived, where normally it's like the princess is inactive, the prince has no personality, and somehow there's a beginning, middle, and end, regardless.
Right.
But they treat each other like rom-com characters, and they're like bickering and flirting and dancing and almost kissing, but then not kissing. Like it's like a 90s rom-com movie. And then I do think that he, maybe not to the degree he should, but he does change, admit he's wrong, express remorse, and then gives her space until she decides she wants him back.
Yes, so that's true.
Maybe that's poor judgment on her part, but at least she decided, because it was like, you know, when he kidnaps the old lady, you're like, I don't know, you know. maybe he's lawless, and maybe I shouldn't be rooting for him. But he doesn't kidnap her.
So it's a feminist
text. So in
that
way, he is an ally.
Oh, there's a moment where Vlad says to him about Anastasia,
she
certainly has a mind of her own. And then Dimitri responds by saying, yeah, I hate that in a woman. So,
but then Anastasia goes,
she sure does. And she sure does. Yeah. On the train. Yeah.
And I love that for her.
I love that for her.
She always does have like a really good retort. So that's
not an example of one.
I don't know. Speak for yourself.
And that scene pays off by
Kelsey Grammer taking out this notebook he has.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's keeping score.
Oh, right.
Of Anya and Dimitri. And the raspberry does count as a point for Anya.
It really yeah. does.
Canonically.
It says so much by doing so little.
Ugh. Exactly. We're like, okay, well, I guess she is in the lead. She's in the lead.
Yeah.
So this is a feminist text.
Yes. Yes.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing
right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married yeah. at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation yeah. that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We read a fun fact, although the credibility of this website was wildly tested. It was written by a guy named Nat, and that's pretty much all we know about
him. He didn't even offer up his last name.
No, no credentials, just Nat. You know how Nat is, and you know how he gets. And one of the facts, it was like 10 facts about Anastasia right now, you know? And one of them was just wrong. One of them was like, it came out the same week as Little Mermaid, and you were like, no, that was 10 years before that.
Oh, so. Okay, so I read something that that person might have meant. So Disney re-released...
Oh.
The Little Mermaid, I think like a week before Anastasia came out, and then they released a bunch of other stuff the week after in a clear attempt to
to bury
Anastasia.
Oh, so Nat had a point.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess. Well, what does he say?
And oh, well, Nat said this wonderful thing. This is a classic Nat. He said that Meg Ryan was really trepidatious about doing it. She did not want to do it because it was like right after Sleepless in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't know if I want to do cartoons. And then the animators convinced her, or the director convinced her by animating a scene from Sleepless in Seattle. It was just like, look, it can exist as an animation and still hold its merit. And then she got to really bring her own acting into the piece. And so you see a classic Meg Ryan trope being acted out. That's why it's so real and so raw.
And I'm pretty sure that's actually true, that they did do that. Yeah. So even though the credibility of the website is questionable.
That was right. I mean, 97 is a good year for this movie to have come out, because I think the Disney animated movie that year was like Hercules or like something that I don't think did well at first. I do love those stories where it's so fucked up, but whenever Disney tries to just absolutely murder something in a really obvious way, and then we're still like, but it's fine because my childhood, like, you're like, it's not good. Right. Like, it's scary.
Yeah.
Oh, I just still don't like what they did to Andy Serkis's Jungle Book movie. I guess that's just what I'm saying. They killed Serkis with that one.
Man.
Serkis should be a billionaire. I'm sorry. I had two sips of a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
She's going off.
And now I'm acting out now.
Speaking of things that I found about the movie Anastasia that come from a website that is perhaps not the most credible, so I don't know how much validity there is to this
different
statement.
Website?
Did you read Nat?
Different website.
Is this Nat?
No.
Is it a Nat piece? Okay.
But Bernadette Peters, who voices the character of Sophie, the Empress's cousin.
Empress's new cousin.
Yes. Bernadette Peters reportedly said that she did not like the way her character Sophie was designed because Sophie is plus size, mm-hmm. and she did not apparently want to be represented as someone who was plus size.
To which I respond, who even knows what Bernadette Peters looks like?
Who?
Like, right. Shut up. Can also anyone picture her? Like, no one's like, that doesn't look like Bernadette Peters. Like, no one knows what that...
What I love about animation is that they look exactly like the person who's voicing them. Like, Kelsey Grammer looks exactly... And Rasputin, I mean, it's like looking in the mirror. I mean, wow.
Right.
The only example is that Dimitri looks exactly like John Cusack.
Yeah.
And everyone else looks like, guess what, a cartoon, except for Hank Azaria, who looks just like the Bat.
He does look like the Bat. It's true. A luscious. Mm.
Luscious.
Mm. Luscious little
sexual
body of the Bat.
But that brings me to, I just want to talk a little bit about the way plus size people are presented in this movie, because
sure.
Vlad is a big guy. He is shown as being like extremely ungraceful most of the time. He falls over on the train, and like that's why he can't help Dimitri, and that's why Anastasia has to step up and help Dimitri with the train debacle. And then later on, they're on the ship, and he like takes the top bunk of the bunk beds, and it like sinks down so low that it like crushes the dog. So basically, like, his weight and his body is like played as a joke several times. I feel like the same thing happens for Sophie's character. It's just not good in a movie that like doesn't seem to like punch down at anyone else really. But
yeah, and I think that is like such an older animation trope too, mm-hmm. that it would just be like super easy to not do.
Right.
And they for some reason like choose to like play to, because there's a million old cartoons where that happens repeatedly, and it's not necessary and it's not funny.
No.
And it's it does feel like weirdly out of place in
for sure
in
yeah.
this movie.
Can I talk about the Titanic parallels?
Yes, I have the same list, I think.
Okay. All right, here are mine, and let's compare notes.
Okay.
A poor guy trying to make money in Paris, and
ooh, yeah.
a woman with red hair coming from a rich family, and the two of them fall in love. Wait,
the shot on the staircase, the full body shot of the dolled up female protagonist on an elegant staircase. That was on my list.
Okay, I don't have that one.
Ooh.
The man saving the woman from going overboard on a ship.
Yep.
a necklace being a pretty big plot point.
What about the poor guy being dragged out of the room being like, you don't understand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, didn't have that one. The woman has a music box. The end.
The end. They came out the same year. Could it be a coincidence? Mm-hmm. Who copied who? This movie was made by Fox Animation. From what you were telling me, this is not an animation company that lasts very long. They make this movie, it's very successful. They make one other movie, it's dog shit, the end. That's the whole history. And they're kind of doing, I almost thought this was a DreamWorks thing, but I don't think, I think this predates DreamWorks, but they're doing the DreamWorks thing where they're just kind of stealing from Disney movies and being like, people will think this is a Disney movie. And there's so many, and that's, I think, part of like why this movie is so good, because they steal a lot of really good parts from Disney movies that came out very recently, mm-hmm. where like the Rumor in St. Petersburg number, which historic, I mean, if you look, so this takes place in 1926, Stalin is in power, and this is a musical number where the people under communist Russia, they're like, yeah, there's food rations. Yeah, life is really difficult. Yeah, we're all suffering. And then the last line before you get into the chorus is like, but we love rumors and gossip. Anyways, and then they start to dance yeah. about rumors. It's so...
And that's true. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's actually true. Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, it's really tough out here. Thank God for these rumors.
Well, when I'm lacking in food, I'm just making up for it. Rumors. Yeah. Delicious. Little tapas of rumors. You're full. Who cares? Yeah.
But that number looks a lot like the first number in Beauty and the Beast, where it's also like the peasants of this community people, being yeah. like, we're the goofs.
Right.
Because poor people... what else? We've got like the female protagonist singing her mission.
I mean, Anastasia all but sings, I want much more than this provincial life.
Yeah, except she actually has like motivation.
Right. Well, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about, like Anastasia versus a Disney movie, is that like, and this does happen to some extent in Anastasia, but like in like Little Mermaid, where she's like, oh, she loves people, culture. She wants to go up where the people are. And then in Belle's case, people culture. In Belle's case, she wants much more than this provincial life. She wants to go on an adventure in the great wide somewhere. But in both movies, they don't really get farther than like the hands of a man, the arms of a man.
Yeah.
And
Belle literally goes, I would say, less than 3 miles away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And has no idea there's a castle.
But the story then becomes about like her involvement with the male love interest. Whereas, I mean, in Anastasia, yes, she does elope with a man at the end. But the story is more about like her journey to figure out herself and her family history and her backstory, rather than like there is the subplot of the romance, but it's not what takes over the whole story.
Yeah.
So.
Knowledge of oneself. Wow.
Yeah, I like beautiful. It. Another one of the big, I think we already sort of said this, but In the Dark of the Night is like the same exact number as Be Prepared from Lion King, to the point where it is sung by the same man. I know. You guys? Okay.
Does Jeremy Irons not sing Be Prepared?
He sings about 2/3 of it.
Okay.
And then he was getting a little pitchy dog on some of them. And so they bring in Jim Cummings.
Okay.
Who sings entire In the Dark of the Night, but it's like, not only is it super visually similar where they're in a cave and there's green fog and there's singing animals who are stand-ins for Nazis there. But it's also literally the same guy singing it. It's okay. Such a blatant ripoff that I do respect it. yeah, so they just like stole a bunch of like some of the best scenes from Disney movies and just sort of retrofitted it to fit this historically accurate movie.
Yes.
Yes. Can I give a brief rundown of the historical accuracy?
Yes, please.
Because it is like wild that this story was chosen to be adapted. And I guess that there is like early drafts of this script that were closer to the real story, which when you know the real story seems impossible in children's animation. Because what actually happened, so in IRL, Rasputin was not an enemy of the Romanovs. He was a close friend of the Tsarina slash fucking her, we don't know. but he claimed to like have magical powers. Mm-hmm. He somehow cured the youngest Romanov's hemophilia with either magic or basic medicine, we don't know. either way, he gets a lot of influence in the court. The Tsarina really likes him. He's a friend of the family. And he dies 2 full years before the Romanovs are killed.
Yeah.
So that has nothing to do with anything. The Romanovs are all for sure killed. They are all shot in a basement by the Bolshevik government during the Russian Revolution. But like the Rasputin and the Romanovs were like never on bad terms. All the Romanov kids die. The grandma was out of town, but she was in Denmark, which is too boring for the movie. The grandma never looked for her family. She took it. She was like, I guess they're dead. And she was right. They were all dead. There were some rumors that Anastasia lived. And it's funny why. This is horrible. But like, the rumors were that Anastasia had maybe lived because she was wearing so many diamonds that they deflected the bullets. And so she lived, and she was around. And there was one very successful Anastasia impersonator, which it looks like most of this movie is modeled on, if it were true, which it wasn't.
Right.
But there was this girl named Anna Anderson who was like poor and looked similar. And they were like the reason they gave, they were like, well, she suffered a lot of depression, so it's probably her. And and she like wrote memoirs as if it were true.
Oh, wow.
There was some hot guy involved in the con. And so that's unfortunately. And also they erase all the messy, oppressive Stalin stuff.
Yes.
It's so weird that they chose to make this a movie.
That's kind of the one thing that I would say most differentiates it from other Disney movies of this time is that it's taking history and then really taking a lot of liberties with it, but it is
using Pocahontas?
But most of Disney movies were based from like fairy tales and you know, mythology and stuff like that. And Anastasia is taking, you know, historically inaccurate events and then making those into a movie. But it is based in at least real life figures, which is irresponsible to so wildly misrepresent what actually happened and then have that be a children's movie. Because you know how many children will watch the movie version of something rather than like reading the real thing?
Me.
A lot. Yeah. All of us.
I thought this was the only thing I knew about Russian culture for the first like 16 years of my life.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those things where I sort of took it at face value until forced to say it aloud. I was like, yeah, well, he was a wizard.
But yeah.
But he failed. But then he died. But then he came back.
So I don't think that that's the best choice that a movie has ever made. But I would say overall, it handles a lot of things better than a lot of Disney movies of its time.
Yeah, I think if we're just looking at the way like it is, if this is like this company's take on what is a clear like trying to take a little bit of whatever the princess market is at this time, like they do a better job.
Yeah.
And they steal a lot of what Disney was doing better than them, which I guess respect. I don't know. This movie rules. I don't know what to say. I can't, no one's going to talk me into disliking it. So there's 4 credited writers on this movie, 2 of whom are women, which you have to think has to do with, because most princess movies were not written by women, and I don't think it really shows at all.
No.
But there's one screenwriter, Nani White, who also wrote Newsies, Tarzan, Hunchback of Notre Dame, 102 Dalmatians, and worked on The Lion King. Then there's another screenwriter, Susan Gauthier. I couldn't find her creds. And then also Carrie Fisher did rewrites on this movie.
Yeah, because she was a prolific script doctor for many years, and she would help punch up a bunch of scripts.
She was supposed to have been the person who added in What did you say the name of the lady who ran the orphanage
was? Oh, that would be Comrade Fleminkoff.
That's a Carrie Fisher edition.
That's
a Carrie Fisher joint?
Yeah, wow. Damn. Canonically, is a Carrie Fisher joint.
It's also spelled like, because I watch everything with subtitles on, and the subtitles spell Fleminkoff, P-H-L-E-G-M, the way that phlegm is spelled. And she's like characterized as like this old bag, and it's like, oh, gross, a woman over 35.
I think that is probably true, and also, but like over 35 and poor?
Mm-hmm.
No!
Right.
Because you see, Angela Lansbury is kind of like she's hot.
because she's rich.
She's rich.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Which, you know, canon.
Right.
Yeah, did you have anything else, Caitlin?
The only other thing I wanted to mention was Rasputin talks about at least 3 times in the movie how much he loves cologne. Did anyone else pick up on this? It's in his song. He mentions it later before he's about to go try to kill Anastasia himself in the flesh. And then I think there's another scene where you see him like spritzing it on. So he is obsessed with cologne. Wow. Rewatch Anastasia. Be on cologne watch. Just wanted to point that out.
I wonder if that is like a fact about as someone who has several biographies of Rasputin in her home. I've never encountered that fact before. My favorite Rasputin fact, if you want to check it out on your own, is you should look up Rasputin. He has 3 kids on the books, but there were some side kids.
Some side pieces, of course.
Much like, I'm sure that his bat was one of his
absolutely.
But he had 3 kids, and the one who didn't get killed later is named Maria Rasputin, and she went on to be a lion tamer and a burlesque performer, and then she moved to L.A. So honestly, live your best life. When your dad is a cartoon villain, what are you going to do?
Wow.
Become a lion tamer and move to L.A.
Wow.
So. And burlesque performer.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And a major Rasputin did nothing wrong.
An apologist.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And I'm like, I've seen the movie.
Yeah, babe.
I know what he did.
Yeah.
Anyone have any other final thoughts?
No.
Okay. All right.
No.
Does Anastasia pass the Bechdel test?
Yes.
It does. Right away between young Anastasia and her grandmama.
Mm-hmm.
It does pass between Anastasia and Comrade Fleminkoff, believe it or not.
Great
and
name.
Then I think also between Anastasia and Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about
the circumstances of her entire family's death.
Right.
Yeah. There was also a pass between Grandmama and Sophie.
Oh, right. Yes.
But other than that, I think that that's all I had.
Cool.
Unfortunately, Mrs. the Bat didn't get any character.
Why isn't she named?
Where's her arc?
There is a direct-to-video...
Bartok the
Magnificent. Okay.
It's...
All right.
I won't spoil anything. It's quite bad. But it is like... I think Hank Azaria is one of those people who is kind of down for whatever. He was fully back. He didn't call in a backup. He's like, I'm available. Bartok the Magnificent, I'm in.
Oh, good grief. All right, so let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
Okay.
Rate the nipple.
On our movie scale.
Yes.
How many movies would you give this?
So our nipple scale is 0 to 5 nipples based on its representation of women. And all things considered, I'd give it like a 2.5 or a 3. Were you expecting me to go way lower?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm excited.
For your birthday, I'll bump it up to a 3.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think, again, if you're comparing it to other, like, animated children's media of this time, especially, like, a princess narrative, I think it does handle a lot of things way better by comparison. It's still, you know, wedging in a romantic relationship where there doesn't need to be one, I would say. It's, you know...
But his haircut? He's so dreamy.
Did you see him
though? That's another Titanic, the haircut.
Yeah.
His haircut
the
looks
hair
exactly
is the same.
Like
the middle yeah. part. Ooh, that's true.
Oh, I had one.
So
I did.
Three and a half?
I did have one more Titanic parallel on my list. It is men doubting a woman's identity, because that happens at the beginning with Old Rose. They don't believe that she is who she says she is.
Oh, yeah.
And they're also not sure if Anastasia is Anastasia. So the movies are basically the same. And may I just say that one of the songs in Anastasia was nominated for an Academy Award, but Ooh. Lost to My Heart Will Go On
Wait,
by Celine
was that
Dion,
the...
our queen.
Also, it's worth mentioning, if you like to go to places like YouTube.com, like myself, yes. there is like a making of featurette about Anastasia that's hosted by Aaliyah.
Excuse me.
May she rest in peace. Because she, if you listen to the song at the end of Anastasia, the credit song, it's sung by Aaliyah. She did a song for this movie. And she does that whole, like, how they used to do those weird, wonderful world of Disney, but not of like, hi, I'm this person, you know. Let's see this movie. And, like, she hosts it.
Wow.
So she's just
does she
standing.
Do a chair turnaround or no?
No, she's standing in front of the Eiffel Tower looking deeply uncomfortable.
All right, okay.
She's like, as we all know, Anastasia comes out soon. Let's learn more.
Beautiful.
Oh, it's good. The Aaliyah song is good. You should on the soundtrack.
Good. It's no in the dark of the night. I don't know.
That's
the rest.
Disrespectful.
Okay. There. So, yeah, I'll stay with three nipples.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
No, three, because it does handle a lot of things well in terms of like the princess character, giving her more development, more personality, more agency, more motivation than a lot of other comparable movies of its time. But it still has some things about it, as we've discussed, that bump it down to a three, not a three and a half. So that's
okay.
So sorry. I know it's your birthday.
It's not.
But it's over a month away, your birthday, but no. Three nipples, and I will give one to a historically accurate representation of Anastasia, so not this movie.
So the dead one?
So the dead one.
Okay.
I will give...
You just gave one of your nipples to a dead eight-year-old, but... Go off, I guess.
I'll give one to...
I think I'm having a panic attack.
I'll give one to the dog, whose name I forget. And I'll give my final Puka. Nipple to Mrs. Pinkbat.
So. I'm going to go 3.5.
Okay.
I think that in a lot of ways... Annie, you were saying that this last night where, like, Disney acquired Fox, and you said a lot of mouth breathers are trying to figure out yes. if she's a Disney princess now or
yes.
not.
Yes. There's a whole just community out there that's been like, finally our princess has been crowned. Finally, they're crawling out. I mean, like, at last she's doing Disney. So,
yeah, right. Which is like the weirdest like late capitalism like take to have of like this is actually a good thing like
right.
As Anastasia is a Disney princess, but there I mean for the like you were saying like for the fact that this is a separate animation company trying to do the same format. And then they do it better. They give their character more agency. She's funny. She's cool. She's calling the shots in the relationship for the most part, mm-hmm. except for, of course, the large deception.
Right.
Other than that, it's all her.
Bingo.
I love her. Rasputin is an icon of any sort, really. You name it, he's an icon. I like the bat.
I love the bat.
I feel like I was coming down a little hard on the bat earlier.
Yeah.
And in the marketing, especially at the ice show, we had a slushy in the bat's head. They were really pushing the bat in marketing. They really wanted to make the bat a thing, and we still have that cup. My dad drinks out of that bat's head to this day. My dad drinks out of all the on ice cups.
Okay, oh good.
He doesn't like to throw things away, and he puts coffee in the bat's head. And then he writes about hockey all day, and that's his feminism. But yeah, no, I like this movie a lot. I think that it like is one of the best versions of this format. So 3.5 nippies. I'm gonna give 2 to the cartoon Anastasia. Jesus. then I'm gonna give 1 to Demeech.
I'm sorry.
What? Sorry. Did you? I've been holding that back for a long time now. And then I'll kick the last half nip. I'll give it to the dog. Dog kind of looks like my dog. Pretty cute.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, a little floppy dog that looks stupid.
Does anyone remember what the dog's name was?
Pooka.
Pooka.
It's Pooka?
It's Pooka.
The dog's name is Pooka?
Does that mean something?
No. Oh.
It's just like a...
It's Russian for dog.
Wow. Puknut is to fart, so that's right in the neighborhood, and that's fun. That's just fun.
That's fun.
Oh, I hope they named the dog Fart.
Wow. I was going to say the comrade Flemingkov or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's actually like a pretty common Russian trope in Russian literature, especially like humor stuff, is that someone will be like an asshole and their name will be Mr. Shit. And it's just like never addressed. It's just like Mr. Shit is being mean again. And so that's like a very, very common trope. And it's dealt with like very matter-of-factly. Like it's not really addressed.
Oh,
like in Dostoevsky, a lot of times there's somebody with the name Mr. Shit, literally. So I don't know. So that's a, for me, that's, I don't know. There's some accuracy there. That's
pretty
nice.
Good. That's pretty good. Anna, what would you rate the movie on the nipple scale?
Okay, so on the nipple scale, I would rate the movie... I think 3.5 is a great rating. I think you were wrong with 3.
Oh,
so
boy.
What are you? What an embarrassment. No,
I
just mean it really is so different from other... I mean, it really rocked my world that it was not a Disney movie because it looks so much like a Disney movie that it's alarming. Like, how did they not get sued? but she seems like an autonomous, I mean, given the time also, which is the turn of this, you know, the like this 1916, 1926. I don't know how independent women were in Russia, quite frankly.
They were fiercely independent, I'm guessing.
Super independent.
Yeah. It was actually a very feminist community.
Super feminist. Tight little community of us feminists running around, doing
small.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Very small. You knew everybody. All the girls were there. but she's like at least an interesting character who's funny and stands up for herself.
Yeah.
So I'm comfortable with 3.5 nipples.
Love
it. Good.
For this movie. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Anna, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having
me. Give it up for Anna.
Wow. And thank you.
Tell us, where can people follow you online? Is there anything you would like to plug?
I have a very exciting, not yet to be talked about project involving Keanu Reeves. That will be a podcast sometime soon. It will pass the Bechdel test.
Oh, good. Even though it's about Keanu Reeves?
Even though.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
True. Yeah. How do we identify, how do we as women who are obsessed with Keanu Reeves maintain our autonomy? I mean, all you really need to know, I guess, is that my Twitter is touching Jesus.
Yes.
And that's really all I have to say for myself.
Okay.
So. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Follow Anna at Touching Jesus.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.
For being here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to the Ruby for hosting us. Yeah. Thanks to our very good pal Sammy for recording for us. Thanks to Jeff in the tech booth.
Hell yeah.
And happy birthday, Jamie.
In a month.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yay. Thanks once again to our guest, Anna Saragina, for joining us. Make sure to follow her on all the social media platforms and check out her stand-up comedy and her upcoming podcast. Thanks to the Ruby for having us. Thanks to Sammy Junio for recording us. Thanks to the audience for supporting us. And thanks to you for listening to us. We will be here next week. See you then.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.